Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSats certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
So I've got Amy on the line. Amy, welcome to the show. What's your question?
Well, I have a question about what healthy sexuality looks like when a sex addict is in recovery.
One of the things we know about research and sex addicts is that they don't necessarily want sex with their own wife. And so to me, that says he's in really good recovery because he does want that with you. He has been 2 years sober. He has been in 3 facilities. And I suspect that's how he's wanting closeness with you.
I would have to agree. You know, it is so important for clients who are going to restore their relationship to figure out how they can meet that physical need in a safe way. And so what that means is you have to determine as a partner what feels safe for you and whether you need to stretch out of your comfort zone to restore the relationship even further. That's your decision. I'm not saying that you should do this or not do that, but I am saying that when men go to SAA or SA, told, hey, you can live without sex. You hurt her, and if she doesn't want to have sex with you, that's her prerogative. Okay. That being said, if you make the choice to be with your husband, to stay with him, it's probably important to at least work on that relationship with a partner-sensitive therapist who understands, that won't push you in any particular direction, that will hear the needs of you and or your husband, and who is willing to, if you will, walk through that door together. You know, I just so much believe that sometimes relationships can be restored 100%. And sometimes a sexual relationship can be restored with a bit of baggage from the past. Sometimes it waxes and wanes. And so being with a therapist or a coach who has expertise, trauma, sex addiction, and in the things that you're going through will help, it'll help clarify some things for you. And then if you invite your spouse to be a part of that, you'll be able to figure out, is there a compromise or negotiation here? Because the truth of the matter is all relationships are about compromise and negotiation. However, there is no doubt that that can take a long time to develop. Don't be too hard on yourself. But if you two are working on the other areas of your relationship, you know, your social, your emotional, your intellectual, your spiritual, your purposeful, and you're not addressing the physical, or if the physical just seems to be stagnant or stalled out, that may not get better by itself, and it really may require the help of someone who knows how to make that better. Now I'm excited about today's show because we're going to be talking about a relationship restoration program for couples. And I just don't think there are enough of those around. You know, restoration programs that actually have a partner-sensitive approach that also really understands what sex addiction is about. And so I'm going to be talking to Timothy Lee, who founded the New York Pathways Relationship Restoration Program. And hopefully, he'll be sharing information with us that we can disseminate for those people that are looking for that kind of program. You know, no matter where you're at, maybe you're a partner and you're in separation. Or maybe you're a partner that's divorced. We want to be able to help you too. And if there are some good programs, some good tools, some real issues that you're dealing with, I want you to email me at carol@caroldecoach.com. Because the truth of the matter is this is APSATS Radio. It's Betrayal Recovery Radio, and we are here to help you deal with the before, the afters, and anywhere in between of what you've been through with partner betrayal, right? I mean, we want that for you. And that means that you can spoon feed us what it is that you need so we can get it right. That's what we do on this show. We figure out what you need, what you're wanting to know, and then we let you know what that's all about so that you'll have all the tools and the resources you need to work through this crisis. It's no easy feat, is it? So Timothy is going to be talking about his program, and we're going to be checking in with him. Now, I'm wondering, it's just been a heck of a couple of weeks. We had the sex addiction shootout last week. I know there's all sorts of thoughts and feelings about that. Some people think, oh, no, that was just an excuse, and other people think that he was trying to get rid of what he hated most about himself. And no matter where you stand on this topic, it's just another example of how sex addiction can destroy oneself if you're the addict, one's family, one's community, and you know, our hearts go out to anybody who's been affected by this story. And I know it was really triggering for partners, and it was really shameful for addicts. I mean, I talked to a lot of addicts in good recovery that said, oh, you know, we don't need bad press out there, especially when so many of us are doing well. So, again, our hearts go out to everybody, the Asian community, the community at large, and sex addicts and partners everywhere. So now, you know, what are we going to talk about today? We're talking about restoration, relationship restoration, because so many of you are looking for ways to restore your relationship. And Timothy Lee, he founded the New York Pathways Relationship Restoration Program. He actually founded New York Pathways. So Timothy, welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio. How are you?
I'm good, Carol. How are you?
Doing very well. And that's what I was going to say. You know, we've chatted before. You know, I really believe in this program of relationship restoration. And so I'm going to ask you initially, tell us a little bit and what made you go into this field.
Okay. Well, I'm in recovery myself. There's a lot of therapists who gravitate towards working in the addiction field. I find that a lot of them have their own process around it. And I don't know, around 2000 or a few years before the year 2000, I was looking for a therapist in New York to help me with some of my issues. And I got to tell you, there must have been 5-6 therapists I went through until I finally found someone who I felt like got me and got my condition of out of control sexual behavior. And a lot of clinicians I met with, I would hear like, that's normal, or try to control it, or, you know, I wasn't quite getting anywhere, you know? And so when I finally found a therapist that that got the condition, that knew where to guide me, and that connected me with the right 12-step recovery groups, I was able to finally overcome it one day at a time. And then I had devastated two careers because of my sex addiction. I was on the work-wise, I was in recovery for a year, and then got married, was able to have a healthy relationship for the first time in my life at 31 years old, and my wife was like, you got to get a job, a career, you know. She's a working professional, and she encouraged me, you know, like, hey, you're really in your recovery, you're really strong at it, you know, you have sponsees, you go to meetings, you have all the ingredients. And, you know, it really struck me at first, like, I don't know, you know, I don't know if I want to make this, make this a business, you know. And, Bill Wilson, the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, he had a whole struggle around that. You know, when a hospital asked him to run the alcoholism department, you know, he was talked out of that, and that, you know, I'm in recovery in AA as well. But then I really got to thinking about it. You know, like there's so much misinformation out there, or non-information, and about sex addiction, and there's so many opinions about it. And I really felt strongly that I had a personal breakthrough, and I could help others hopefully have a similar experience. And so I went back to school and connected with the Society for the Advancement of Sexual Health, SASH. I found an organization to join and went to my first conference and really loved it, connected with a lot of people. And I loved it so much, I asked if I could do service. And I thought, you know, I could stuff envelopes or do something. And they asked me to join their board with my, previous experience in marketing. And I learned so much from you know, from Milton Magnus, from Marcus Earle, so many clinicians. You know, I was able to pick their brain, talk to them, and really got a good ideas on how to establish a program and practice. And so, I did the CSAT training with Patrick Carnes. Also, you know, did little like various certifications with Doug Weiss. You know, I did a little training at PCS. So, you know, I got a good grounding in that. And, you know, and then I finally started my practice at New York Pathways in about 2007. You know, I had a job at Hazleton. I was working at Hazleton as an addictions counselor, and I started a private practice in sex addiction, and it just took off, you know, way faster than I thought it would, you know.
And yeah, it's so, like one of those things that you build it and they will come. So
right,
you weren't even sure you really wanted to go that direction, but the need was there and you started it, and it just really it is a program that has touched a lot of people, right?
Yeah. And and just a little bit background about how the relationship restoration started is that my vision at first was that I would work with the addicts just like myself, and then my patients, clients, they would start talking about their wives, you know, and then it occurred to me then the wives would come in, you know, very distraught. You know, at that time, I'd see them very distraught, very in need of support. And, you know, and then after, you know, thank God I went to those conferences because I got some ideas on how to treat, you know, how to treat the partners, you know. and how to start seeing it as trauma, you know, PTSD, and how to see that there that the discovery of sexual addiction is a very, very traumatic event, and that it although sex addiction mimics alcoholism and chemical dependency, the partners mm-hmm. do not mimic the partners of alcoholics. You know, I think that's where a lot of folks get confused, you know? And so Kathleen Kelly, who was running the family program at Hazelden, and then she was half-time and she was working in a private practice half-time, I approached her and told her the need of the work with partners and so on, and quickly she jumped on board, and her and I have been working together, you know, for at least 11 years, working with where we started out, where I would work with the addict, I would have a meeting with the sex addict, their partner, and then I would explain some of the work we do with the partner, and then most of them would be working with Kathleen. And so that's how it got started. And
how long ago was that when you really realized that you needed a partner-sensitive, trauma-sensitive, PTSD-sensitive program for partners? How long ago was that?
That was back in 2009. As soon as I started seeing addicts, the spouses started coming in, you know, very devastated, helpless, and I was not expecting that, you know, because I was used to working in the field of chemical dependency and dealing with the family system, with the codependent treatment model, you know, and I had my own denial, you know, of the intensity of it, you know, and how do I work with a client who has, you know, intrusive thoughts, you know, flashbacks of the discovery, you know, and suffering from depression, anxiety, you know, a very bleak outlook on future. You know, very hypersensitive, very hyper arousal is up, and you know, all of these symptoms. You know, a quit's not the right word, but I just wasn't expecting, you know, that the partners of sex addicts would be impacted so much. And so that kind of got me thinking about, wow, we need to really beef up what we're doing for our partners. And I think that it's a cultural thing, I think, to diminish or be in denial, you know, about the impact of trauma, you know, and as far as, you know, war trauma, you know, sexual abuse trauma, you know, I think it's a cultural thing. Judith Herman wrote her book, Trauma and Recovery. You know, it's a great book on the history of trauma treatment, you know, and how culturally women especially, you know, were taught to essentially deny it, you know, that there's mm-hmm. nothing wrong. You know, stick it out. You know, and also one other point about trauma is that you know, when there's trauma, you have a perpetrator and you have a victim, and mm-hmm. there's almost like a pact between the perpetrator and victim is to be silent, you know, not talk about it, and then everything will be okay, and you don't have to deal with the pain of it, and not that that really applies to the partners we work with, but on some levels it does, you know, that there's a cultural belief, you know, working through betrayal trauma on a cultural setting or footing that, you know, it's not really welcome to, like, talk about it, you know? And
I hope that makes
yeah. So.
Well, you know what? You're singing to the choir because you're on an AFSAT show, and AFSAT obviously is a partner-sensitive treatment model for partners and addicts that is based on trauma. Our information is based on Judith Herman. We use a same three-phase approach that she does.
Okay.
And so it's just so refreshing to meet a man who is able to identify the differences between codependency from an AA model, an Alcoholics Anonymous model, and the trauma that a partner feels because it's so relational. And so when I heard you had this restoration program, I said, I got to talk to Tim because clearly you are very sensitive. You know what a good program requires. And, you know, I'd like you to talk a little bit about what that program is all about. I mean, how do you interweave the work between group therapy and individual therapy and for addicts as well as offer treatments for partners?
Sure. Well, New York Pathways, we have the way to best way to describe it is that there's three tracks of treatment. We have the treatment for the addicts, the treatment for the partners, and then the treatment for the relationship. For the addicts who come in, for the most part, you know, and as far as addiction treatment is concerned, I'm learning that there's two kind of addicts. There's the addict, and then there's the trauma-based addict, you know. And but for the most part, not to get too far down, to focus more on the partner side here, but we find that a lot of the addicts need a lot of accountability and psychoeducation, you know. And what is a sponsor? What is a 12-step group? What is sexual acting out? What are triggers? You know, what are feelings? A lot of these things. And how to self-soothe. You know, you want to feel validated by acting out. Well, how can we validate by acting out means sexual acting out. You want to feel validated by sexual acting out. Well, how can you feel validated by doing something else? Maybe by going to the gym or meditating, or sharing in a meeting. So try to work with the addicts and a lot of accountability, psychoeducation. You know, the group work we do is very, 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 very important. And with the group, we try to get them. Oh, my cat's at the door here. We'll have to deal with him. We try to get the group members accountable to each other. You know, for example, in my group, it's like I had the group start create their own rules. So to be in Tim's group, you have to have a sponsor, you have to be working steps, be going to meetings, taking actions towards your recovery. And so, and then we review that at the beginning of each group. What actions did you do? And then at the end of the group, what actions are you going to do? And a lot of the group work we also do. We have, you know, the addicts write out their sexual history, their timelines, trauma history, and then they present that to the group. But as far as the partner goes, we have the partners for how do we interweave the work. Well, one example is that the partners who are coming in, we have them write what's called a cost letter. What is my husband's acting out? What has it cost me? How has it cost me emotionally, you know, financially, with the family, with work, you know, how has it cost me? We give them a specific format. And then we take that letter and then we have it read to them in group. So the person in question will pick a group member to read the letter to them. And that is, you know, and that is that. And that is, those are truly the most powerful groups I've seen, you know. It's like a, it's like a flash grenade goes off in the room. And
oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And so and the work there is to help build empathy, you know, with with their partner, to also understand their partner's pain from another perspective. You know, if they've never had a peer listen to their spouse, you know, like I've never, say if I were having a letter read to me, to have one of my peers describe my wife's pain, holy cow. Can you imagine, you know, to understand, you know, your partner's pain from another perspective. And so that is a key work, a key part of the work there. And by the way, thank you, Carol, for Help Her Heal, an empathy
welcome.
Workbook.
Thank you.
That's a very, very powerful resource. And I had a client, he got it on his own, and that's, I had heard about it, but I hadn't quite gotten to it. And a client mm-hmm. of mine got it, and he said, why didn't you tell me about this before? You know, this is such a great workbook. And anyway, so we use a lot of some of the exercises from that, you know, from that, from your workbook. You know, it's really a great thing. When clients write out their disclosure document, you know, which is a whole process in itself, and we could maybe talk about that later. But they'll read the disclosure to the group, to their group, and their group will give him feedback. You know, what they feel is missing. You know, is it insensitive? Is it direct? You know, are they not trying to ask for an apology or seek solace? You know, are they just being clear with their acting out behaviors? And so those are some of the ways how we interweave group work and individual therapy work.
Well, and that makes a lot of sense. And I find, because I have two empathy groups, one is specifically for Help or Heal, and the other group has been, it's 15 weeks, but it's been going since 2007. And when men support each other in being more sensitive, partner sensitive, and more empathetic, it is really powerful, sometimes concepts that just aren't natural. You know, addiction robs a man of empathy, as well as some men, I believe, are prone to addiction because they lacked empathy to begin with. So I really appreciate the fact that you're using the disclosure in a way that actually requires a lot of peer support and feedback.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we also work with the, you know, obviously work with the partners, you know, we want to understand, you know, getting back to Judith Herman and her like three part, the first part is safety, right? And
mm-hmm.
What does a partner need to establish safety? And one of them is, one part of that is we want to understand what the partner wants to understand about the disclosure. You know, like what information do they need, or what don't they need, and what kind of questions are lingering out there? So there's a process we have in working with the partners to get them ready, so they leave no stone unturned in terms of what information they're seeking, what will bring them, what will guide them further along the path of safety and emotional security with self and others. And so we essentially get a list of questions and information, and so if Esty, one of my when my colleagues, if she's working with a partner, you know, she'll give me a list of questions. And then I'll, when I'm working with the addict and we're going over the questions, I'll make sure that that's included in the disclosure. So that we can really work towards, again, reestablishing a sense of safety and working towards trust, you know, and which is trust is hard earned, you know. It's not a it's taken for granted by the addicts. It's really taken for granted and trampled on and abused. And so we want to make it clear, especially to the addicts and to the partners. It's like, we're not about trying to rebuild trust right now. You know, like, let's just get to clarity. Let's get to a sense of safety, you know, starting to feel a little bit more safe, like being able to process some of your triggers and, you know, and then we'll worry about trust later, you know, because I think the expectation is, you know, we got to work on trust. You don't trust me. You know, what can I do to make you trust me? And, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, some people in particular who would not demand it, but just, you know, they feel kind of left out, you know, that trust is a process, you know, that needs to be, it's grown like a garden. it goes in its own time. Yeah.
Well, yes. And with brain science, we know that to get out of the safety and stabilization, and as a partner, grieve the loss of what was, what is, what will never be, and feel the anger and the sadness and the grief around that, takes anywhere from 3 to 5 years. So truly, if a couple are actually working towards her feeling safe, that is the beginning of trust, because she's got to feel safe before she can do some of her own work. Now, I'm wondering, obviously the restoration program involves a disclosure, and it sounds like you do a really good job helping the addict to be in his own individual recovery and then working on this very important process that has to do with truth-telling and, you know, is going to make him feel better about getting it all out and certainly her feeling better about knowing what happened and what she didn't know. Are there other ways that you treat partner trauma?
Well, to your point, the most important piece is gaining that sense of safety and psychoeducation around that, hey, this is, even though we can't put a PTSD diagnosis on it, based off the DSM, we can argue that sexual betrayal trauma mimics, you know, I've heard other partners describe it, they feel like they're raped, you know, like they, that it's, but my point is that if we look at it from a PTSD model, you know, that because I find that a lot of partners, you know, sadly, you know, you've been inflicted with something very, you know, traumatic. And it's not like, you know, it becomes PTSD. You know, normal people, you know, some people, I guess, can shake it off. You know, it takes 3 to 6 months or however long, you know, some people can shake it off, but some cannot, you know, it sticks and it lingers. And the intrusive thoughts, the flashbacks and, you know, the negative mood, depression, anxiety, you know, that stuff hangs around and like that, it so mimics PTSD. So to your question, I did a lot of research on PTSD, and especially the VA has a lot of great stuff, you know. And the VA's model is exposure therapy, you know, CPT, cognitive processing therapy, and EMDR. You know, like those are what they based on their studies, see as the most effective way to treat to treat trauma, PTSD. And I like some of the elements of CPT, cognitive processing therapy. You know, in that model, it's a 15-week. How they do it with the veterans is that anywhere between 10 and 15 weeks of therapy, where you start with a impact statement, and how the trauma has impacted you, and in that impact statement, we're looking for stuck points, you know, or triggers. And where the partner is feeling stuck, you know, with themselves, and not knowing when my husband, you know, when he leaves the house, not knowing what he's doing, you know, when he's looking at his phone, when he's in the bathroom, what is he doing? There could be a piece of furniture that was purchased, you know, that meant something to the couple, but then. Maybe he had sex on the piece of furniture. You know, there's a lot of points that, you know, we want to help the partners, their triggers, help them process, you know. Also a lot of self-regulation, meditation, yoga, mindfulness. EMDR is really helpful with, you know, working at some of those stuck points, triggers. And with some of that work, you know, we can help partners kind of think through it, where if they get activated by a trigger, like give them some tools to question it, you know, is this real or is this a trigger? You know, how can I self-regulate? How can I self-soothe by, tapping as a form? Your audience is familiar with tapping, breathing.
Absolutely.
Meditating.
Nick Ortner.
I'm sorry?
I said Nick Ortner does a great emotional freedom technique around tapping. And,
right.
All those things utilize bilateral stimulation, which is great
for
processing unresolved feelings. And again, I love the fact that you're using the VA. I know that we use the Institute for Trauma, which came from the VA, so we're in sync there. I got to ask you, you had said something earlier in the show about you treat addicts from a two-prong approach, and the first one is maybe they've experienced trauma, and so many of these techniques you're talking about are also good for them, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and
the second approach, what is that? I mean, you're seeing maybe that they've experienced sex addiction as a result of habit and brain science and compulsivity?
Correct, and that's what I call like the addict. And then there's what I call the trauma-based addict, where it's trauma repetition sexual addiction. And so that is more of a trauma-based treatment perspective, you know. And for those just to like trauma repetition, a classic example I had a client who was raped, and that person would go on Craigslist and advertise, you know, how they wanted to arrange a hookup and describe essentially their rape in the Craigslist ad. And then they would meet up with that person and then go, the acting out had to follow these certain steps, you know. And, you know, when I first assessed that person, you know, they didn't tell me about the trauma. They just told me about the way they acted out, right? And then the last part of my assessment, I asked them about their trauma history, and they described their rape. And, you know, I could clearly see the similarities, right? And when I tried to discuss that with the client, they couldn't make the connection for the life of them, you know. And they were very compartmentalized as far as that goes. And so there was and trying to be the old school addiction counselor with that kind of person doesn't work, you know, where it kind of the air traffic control with the addict, they really respond well to the air traffic controller airplane relationship, you know, and you got to do this, do that, and okay, great. The trauma-based, it's the more of a trauma-sensitive, self-soothing, give them more tools towards self-regulation, self-soothing, more exploring the trauma, making the connection between the trauma and the acting out, you know, that kind of trauma-sensitive therapy, that's about, I would say, about 20-25% of our sex addiction clients, you know, have that. And there was another example of a client who was molested by his father, and he was having sex with men but could not identify with being gay. But he couldn't understand why he was acting out with men. And in fact, he went to he couldn't admit that he had been molested by his father. And whenever I would go in the direction of that, he would go into hyperarousal, start screaming at me, and you know, the gentlest of nudge. And then finally he agreed to go to PCS, and when he came back after 2 weeks of PCS, he was able to say, I was molested by my father, and like own it and be in his body when he said those words. And and then that led
to that is the hard work, isn't it? When they break through their own personal denial and can accept a trauma that occurred, and maybe the trauma response, or what you and I both call from the CSAT world, trauma reenactment.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I got a question for you, because we have to end, and if folks want to work with you, and you're out of New York, how do they get a hold of you?
They can email me at tim@newyorkpathways.com, tim@newyorkpathways.com, or call my office 212-244-4447.
And so that newyorkpathways.com, that's a website that they can take a look at the services you offer and get another taste of what we talked about today.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for advocating for the couple shift and being partner sensitive and doing all that research, maybe even about the same time that Barbara Steffens was doing her groundbreaking work with Marsha Means on your sexually addicted spouse, and then, of course, the APSATS, which is the American Partner Sensitive Association for Trauma-Based Therapists and Coaches. I just really appreciate the fact that you did this on your own based on your own experience, and you didn't buy into the old school of thought, which might have been easier, but definitely wouldn't have been as partner sensitive, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's a re-traumatizing way to go.
Yeah, and we never want to do that. Partners are traumatized
because
we don't want to re-traumatize them. And, you know, this is the best thing for addicts. I mean, addicts will have a more fulfilled life, their relationship together. But even if they can't, they need those skills for their work with their colleagues, their kids, and their extended family. So it's a win-win for all of us. And for that, Tim, I am so thankful for your participation today.
Great. Thank you, Carol. Thank you for your work. And I've enjoyed all your workbooks and such. It's been very helpful. You don't know how much you've been helpful.
Well, thank you. We'll talk soon. Yeah, a good guy who put it together, and as a lot of people in this field are experienced survivors of their own addictions or their own trauma. and that was Timothy Lee, who founded the New York Pathways Relationship Restoration Program. So, thanks so much for being on the show. Plug that he was talking about my book, Help Her Heal, an empathy workbook to help sex addicts learn empathy. I have an online course for those people that don't like to read, and it can be found at Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And it has many, many modules, and it takes it a little bit at a time. And I just had two men buy it today. I say I like to develop and design programs that help people while I sleep. You're listening to Betrayal Recovery Radio. I'm Carol Jurgensen-Cheap, a.k.a. Carol the Coach, and we'll be back next week.
For more information, go to APSATS.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.